Welcome to another edition of the 51%, Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. An eclectic Muna Sala is her own mini United Nations. Born in Saudi Arabia to Eritrean parents, Muna, the oldest of four children, moved to London with her mother and her siblings when she was 8 years old. She studied music and acting in college in the UK and traveled throughout Europe singing R&B and pop. But not long after, Muna was on the road again, this time making her way to the States, specifically New York City, where she hoped to pursue a music career. As a way to make ends meet, Muna freelanced as an Arabic teacher and a translator of Tigrinya, which is the national language of Eritrea. And it was during that 8 years that she, in her own words, stumbled into teaching and subsequently created her own teaching method. In 2010, she transitioned to teaching online. And then in 2011, Muna created Great Minds Learn, live, instructor-led language lessons in Arabic, French, Spanish, Portuguese, Italian, and Mandarin, taught by a staff of more than 30 teachers. It was relaunched this year. So, at just 31, Muna has worn many hats. Singer, songwriter. She also paints, sells her art. She's a teacher. She's a businesswoman. So let's meet her already. Muna, it's a pleasure.
Likewise. Thank you for having me.
So, Muna, it sounds like you have a lot of moxie. You've been there, done that. So let's start with Great Minds Learn and work back. You say your approach to learning a new language is unconventional. So what does that mean?
When I was teaching Arabic, I found that most of my students were learning modern standard Arabic, which is the first thing you learn when you're learning Arabic. And that's the Arabic that everybody speaks. Now, what people don't realize is there are different dialects, and this is colloquial. So when you say you go to Lebanon, you have to speak that dialect in order for them to understand
that's
you.
Like, that's like Chinese.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Think of it, Spanish. When you go to Spain, you speak different Spanish than you would in Latin America.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to master several dialects, and that was Egyptian and Lebanese. Those are the two dominant dialects in the Arab world. So if you watch movies, listen to music, that's what you'll find. It's more Egyptian and Lebanese.
That's interesting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And most people didn't know that, actually. And so I had students from all over, mostly NYU, surprisingly.
Who wanted to learn Arabic.
And they all came with these textbooks, which is modern standard Arabic. They'd been studying for 2 years, paid all this money. And when we sat down, they couldn't even speak to me. So I was like, okay, something has to be done about
gotcha.
This.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how I developed my online method teaching, which actually didn't start off online. It was face-to-face. So what I wanted to do was make it more fun. And so I started creating games. And this would be all on paper.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely back and forth repetition, even musical. So we'd sit down and, you know, I would kind of give it a melody, and they would repeat, and surprise, surprise, they remember it the following day. I'd even record stuff for them mm-hmm. and send it, and it just developed that way. The method itself, I wanted to follow a pattern, so I knew that conjugation was definitely what people struggled with.
And it's boring.
Very, very boring. You know, you don't want to look at a book and just look at all these patterns and keep repeating.
Let me just interrupt you. Did people want to learn conversational Arabic? That's who you were teaching it.
Most definitely.
It wasn't that they wanted to be able to read some tome in Arabic necessarily.
No, but the thing about a language like Arabic is it's so complex that you really do need to start at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was very important that they learned the alphabet.
Well, of
the
course.
Sound,
mm-hmm.
And then from there, actually, I moved on to conversation and conjugation, vocabulary, building their vocab, and then they would slowly start to read by themselves. So I didn't force reading on them,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, we transitioned from writing what they're hearing in phonetics to writing it in Arabic. And then you have accent marks and things like that, which I throw in eventually, over time. Nothing all at the same time. It was all just all very, very gradual. But
you taught one-on-one. You didn't teach a class.
Well, I did one-on-one initially. And then I guess a couple of years later, I was confident. I had my own teaching method, and I was ready to take on groups.
Were you employed by somebody initially when you were teaching Arabic and becoming a translator? You just did that. You just put it out there. You just put up a flyer and said you were available.
The way it happened was I was thinking, what can I do to make money?
To live
independent,
here.
To live here, to survive. It's something I have to enjoy. I'm very big on that. I don't want to do anything I don't want to do. I don't want to be told what to do. I mean, I'm okay taking direction or whatever, but at the end of the day, I didn't want to wake up and go to a 9-to-5.
Mm-hmm.
So I just said, all right, I'm going to go online. I speak Arabic. I'm going to do my research, figure out how to teach, first of all. I'm good with people. People listen to me. I'm good with kids. I was just trying to put it all together. And then I said, all right, I'm just going to go make some business cards. Arabic teacher. I made up the website, just checked it out, if it's available, wrote it out, got my cards on their way, created my site myself, mm-hmm. one of those free sites.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then I just started advertising, and Craigslist was a big one. Anywhere else I could think, printed flyers, Starbucks was heaven. At the time, they would let you
did
put
you
your flyers up.
Did you have any seed money when you came here from England? Did you have in the proverbial a pot to piss in?
No, not really. What I did was I worked over there and I saved.
Saved, sure.
And at the time, the pound was pretty strong. It was double, so that was big help. So when I came over, I had enough to live on. And I always knew I could go back and forth. I could work in London a month and come back. I was good at finding good freelance jobs that paid well to just kind of, you know, bounce around, hold me over. But once I started teaching, I didn't need to do that. And I knew I wasn't going to move around. I wanted to stay put in New York.
This Arabic translating and teaching, whatever, was a means to an end. Because at that point, this was just to make some money so you could explore your music.
Definitely.
And now, in what capacity? As a singer?
As a singer-songwriter, I was actually heavily in the music industry. I was working a lot at
here?
Night in Manhattan. I did a little stuff for Sony, Universal. So I used to, I changed my mind halfway through. I realized I didn't want to be famous. I didn't like a lot of the people in the industry. My soul wasn't, it didn't fit in the music industry. I knew what I loved about music was creating it. And that's why I see myself just as a creative.
So behind the scenes
behind
in music?
Behind the scenes, definitely. And it's behind the scenes, I mean, sitting down writing songs and recordings. And I could definitely work from home doing that. I had my own little setup. So I would write songs and I would record. I would have people come over and, you know, we'd co-write.
Did you sell any songs?
No, I didn't sell any songs. I didn't. I didn't place anything with a major artist, but I definitely had lots of commercials and stuff like that.
So you weren't a living?
Europe. Yeah, I did. But, you know, it's never enough because
always.
It doesn't all come at the same time. It's
for sure.
Over time. Those royalties are just spread out. You don't know when you're going to see it. And so that's why the education, all of that was all at the same time. And I had no problem working 24/7. I actually love to work all the time on stuff I'm very passionate about. So my teaching would be during the day. I'd come home, I would do my music, and then later on in life it was, you know, creating the art that I'm very into. And I paint at least twice a week or three times a week if I have a very, very busy week with the education stuff.
Before we go more into Great Minds, I've just got to ask you this. Was there a real calling for somebody to translate Tigrinya? I mean, who, besides people from Eritrea,
yeah.
who speaks that language?
Surprise, surprise. I had actually a few students who wanted to learn it. So when I transitioned online, I was teaching Tigrinya online. Now, there are a lot of people who speak Tigrinya here and don't speak English, so that's why I was needed.
Okay.
And it would be a translation company. So I was a part of an agency, and there was probably a few people they could call. They were always trying to get me
so
to
you
go.
Always
and
had
I was
work.
Always busy. Yeah, I was always busy, so I would turn down jobs, but it would literally be translating for a divorce or medical. It was very interesting, actually. I met some very nice people.
And very specific, apparently.
It was very specific, yeah.
Uh-huh.
It was in and out. But yeah, I don't do that so much these days, but I'm definitely going to add Tigrinya to the online platform. There are lots of Eritreans who don't speak Tigrinya because they're all over the world.
If you live in Eritrea, is that the only language? I mean, that's the official language of the country.
That is the official language, yes.
Now, when you started Great Minds Learn and you said, you know, I think I've got something here, but where'd the money come from and how did you recruit teachers and explain who your staff is?
I really didn't know
what you were
how
doing.
Much it was going to cost and what it would really take. All I knew is I was going to put whatever I had and I would get whatever I needed for it. So I would work and put whatever I had right into that particular thing that was needed at the time. So if it was a website needed to get done, I'd get the money for that. If I needed to develop a game and I had my developer right there who needed X amount of time, X amount of money to create 7 games for me, I would make it happen. I would design something and then I would hire someone who was qualified to do the job.
Understand.
So I have a great team that I've worked with for 2 years and with developers, website designers, and, you know, they actually all wear many hats just like I do. And that's why we work very well together. Now, in terms of the games, some of the games are very, you know, basic flashcards and, you know, that's stuff that's out there already, but I had to integrate that into my platform. So I had to create it from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to, you know, you had audio, you have the images, you have to make sure your site runs well to even run that, you know?
Sure. Did you start initially with Great Minds with only Arabic in mind?
Well, I knew I was going to expand, but Arabic is what I knew well.
Right.
So that's what I started with.
And you taught the Arabic.
I taught it for a couple of years. All my students who,
Online. Yes.
My students were very hesitant initially because I had to start with the students I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, all right, guys, let's try online.
So we're going to move from face-to-face in a library or whatever,
yes.
And you're going to go online.
Let's switch from me teaching you at a cafe. It takes us, you know, an hour and a half to get there. We could get stuck in traffic. I mean, the expense of sitting there and eating, drinking, well, you know, let's cut all of that out and let's go online. You'll still see me. You'll see my screen. You'll see the actual curriculum. And I actually even write on a pad and they could see everything I'm writing. So the only difference is, you know, we're both at home or at work or wherever you need to be. You just log online. They loved it. It was so convenient. It was more fun because I could, you know, go online and pull up a clip of something and we can analyze that, translate that. It completely changed the way, the experience of learning.
But that was now, still one-on-one.
It was still one-on-one. And then I actually made it 3 people.
Mm-hmm.
So everything I did gradually, I had to make sure it was, you know, I could do it. It was doable and it made sense and it was effective. So once I realized I had my method down,
mm-hmm.
and I started researching, okay, is there a platform where, you know, I could just do, you know, go and sign up, pay and teach online where I don't have to go on Skype or go on GoToMeeting and then I don't have to find a curriculum somewhere, or is that, you know, it was just all very hard to put together. So I was hoping someone out there had something that was already made,
mm-hmm.
but no, there wasn't. So I had to do it.
So you had to come up with this.
I had to come up with something, and because everything I wanted wasn't out there, because no one else was really thinking about doing it that way. So I realized, okay, well, this is a company. I have something here that other people will be able to use. It's a platform. At the moment, the way I have it set up is it's proprietary teaching method, curriculum. So we sat down. I sat down with about 30 teachers for each language, which took a year to get it from A to B. So we said, all right, at the beginning, what do we want to teach them? Of course, every teacher had an opinion and a style of teaching. So and I wanted it to be a specific way.
Uniform.
Yeah, I wanted everything to be uniform and made sure that it was definitely step by step and not all at the same time. So I wanted to implement my method. But, of course, I don't speak French and mm-hmm. I don't speak Mandarin, so I needed the experts.
So today you have how many teachers teaching how many languages?
For French, about 15. And they all, you know, teach several classes. So I don't want to expand anymore until I have that traffic. I have over 15 for each language. Let's put it that way.
And you have about half a dozen languages.
Yes.
And the teachers are all over the world?
They are. Actually, so if you're learning French, it could be a teacher teaching you from France. But then I have lots of French teachers here also.
Do you want to add more languages to your roster?
I do, but I want to go slowly. I want to perfect this 100%, make sure we get all the advanced levels perfect as well. And then absolutely, I'll be adding other languages.
So I can take your class in Mandarin and I can start at a beginner level and then I could stop. If I wanted to, but there's certainly the option to continue for complete fluency.
Definitely. So we start with foundation. Foundation is 10 lessons.
Mm-hmm.
In those 10 lessons, we actually cover a lot. So after each lesson...
Isn't that a lesson an hour?
A lesson is 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have 24/7 access to a virtual classroom. And that's a platform where all the students, after they finish a lesson, they log on. They do their homework. There's a section for homework, so all different games and, you know, tests are available. There's the video recording of the actual lesson. So, and that's what makes us different, actually, because people don't offer you a video of your lesson for you to review. So the student gets to keep that forever, and they can take that lesson over and over again. And there's also a pronunciation tool. So you listen to your teacher. You can slow her down, listen to that again, and then you record yours and compare. And then you can download everything so you can listen on the go. And there's other resources, but those are the main ones that are very important.
How many students do you have?
I don't even know.
A lot?
Yeah, we have enough right now.
Enough to keep
us
busy. Enough to be
making
money?
Yes, enough to keep us busy. But, of course, we're new and we're promoting and definitely out there, so we're expanding.
Now, for you, this is a 24/7 operation because you're dealing with different time zones. Your teachers are in China and in Saudi Arabia, I guess.
In India. And they're everywhere. All my teachers, all my developers, I mean, everybody is everywhere. And I like it that way because they're all individual freelancers who work very hard. And even though they're not here, we actually have a close relationship and we speak every day.
But how do you keep in touch with people where time zones are all over the place? That's crazy.
I work 24/7 and I don't mind because if I know I have to, you know, work on a particular thing and it's with someone, you know, in Europe, then I know I have to get up earlier, which means, you know, I can do something else the other part of the day. I can relax or I make it happen. I never really think about it and I don't think... I'm never too exhausted because I make sure I rest and I have my me time and I meditate and I, you know, work out and I do everything. I try to have a good balance, but I think working hard, especially at this stage, it's a new business. It has to be 100%. I have great support, though. My boyfriend is amazing. In fact, I think he knows just as much because, you know, we discuss everything. We both work very hard and have our own businesses, so... He has definitely been my support throughout GML.
Do you think that your background contributes to your moxie or your, you know, kind of moving around at a young age?
Definitely. It gave me confidence. I think the main thing is...
Why'd you leave Saudi Arabia?
My parents divorced and my mother wanted us to grow up in a different country.
And in a different culture,
yes,
I would imagine.
Yes, completely different culture. I mean, it's not completely far off from our culture, especially the religious aspect of it, but definitely opportunities are different.
For women.
And so my mom chose London, thank God. In fact, I was going to mention that the biggest part of my inspiration has been my mother. She left Saudi at 25 with 4 children. I was 8. Her last kid was just born.
Wow.
So I always knew I could do anything because my mother left the country. She didn't speak hardly any English. So if she could do all of that on her own, I could do anything. I knew that.
But this is interesting because she didn't only leave Saudi Arabia, right? Didn't she leave Eritrea?
Yes, well, prior to that, she left Eritrea because of the war in Eritrea between Ethiopia and Eritrea, so she moved to Saudi.
With your father?
I think she met my father there, actually, and they married, mm-hmm. and then they had us and mm-hmm. divorced, and then she moved to London with us. But I would say that the way I am is partly because I've moved around. I've been exposed to so many cultures and languages, and I've been free to explore. And I'm just very thankful. And I believe that learning a new language is definitely going to broaden a child's horizon. It does make you look at the world differently. It makes you communicate with people in a completely different way. And I've seen that with the children I've taught. You know, they see things completely differently.
And you should always learn a language, shouldn't you, when you're younger? It's easier to learn a language when you're younger.
It definitely is easier, but...
Did you speak English before you got to the UK?
Nope.
So what was
it
that like?
Not a word. I actually remember not speaking a word of English and how it felt. I was so nervous.
I would think.
Initially. And then I recall learning English so quickly. Within 3 months, I understood pretty much everything.
And you felt like you fit in?
I don't think I've ever really fit in. I've always been very different, and I've always known that about myself, even as a teenager. I didn't want to fit in, actually. Mm-hmm. I couldn't care less what anyone thought. I was very opinionated. I did my own thing.
So you lived the whole time in London, right?
Yeah, I lived from age 8 to 21, so yeah.
And so in that time, you had all different kinds of jobs. You were exposed to the arts from going to college, mm-hmm. whatever. And you just at some point assumed that you would be a performer.
Yeah, I did. I thought I'd be in the music industry. But I always knew I'd have my own business. That was very important to me. And I knew that it wouldn't be in the music industry. It would have to be something on the side because that industry, you can't rely on. You can't rely on just acting or singing or even art, you know, even though that's a natural product. You have something I felt like I needed a different business. Because I'm such an entrepreneur, I always see opportunities in things. I have so many ideas. I still have 10 other businesses I want to start in the future. But for now, GML is my baby, and that's what I'm focused on because I feel like that is going to get me to where I need to get to.
You said you were inspired by your mother. Now, this may sound odd. Did you not want to be like her? Or you thought, did your mother struggle in the sense and you thought to yourself, I'm not going to do that?
Well, yeah. Well, of course, my mother did struggle. She had 4 kids and she was a single parent, but the way she pulled it off was inspiring.
And how did she pull it off?
She just kept us together, always showed us love, always let us do what we needed to do. She was strict at times. She just, of course, she didn't have a book on how to parent, and so she had to learn along the way.
But also to be in another country, though, did you feel any kind of discrimination when you were there? Was she able to get work and provide for you without too much difficulty?
It was difficult. I mean, no, she couldn't really. She wasn't as qualified and, you know, it's not like she could turn around and be a doctor.
Sure.
She had 4 kids. So, yeah, it was difficult growing up, but it wasn't that difficult when I look back now.
When you said, I'm out of here, she was completely supportive of you to leave the UK?
She was, but she didn't want me to go. She absolutely didn't want me to go. And I don't think she fully wanted me in the music industry anyway. So she wasn't happy about that, but she knew it's something I needed to do. I'd already been traveling by myself
throughout
prior to that.
Europe.
So she was used to me moving around, but to leave, it seemed for good.
Sure.
And it pretty much was for good. I do go back.
Does
I
she
go
come
back
here?
And forth. Yes, she comes. Hopefully she'll be here this year.
Now, you said that you had made money and that you saved money to get to the States, but it couldn't have been a walk in the park.
No, that's why I had to make sure I was always working. For me, it was definitely, I knew that I could go back and make money and come back. So that was a cushion. And I knew I had, my family's in London, so I could always go back. But that was never going to happen. That was never a choice. So I made it happen here.
And there were never big bumps along the way when she came to New York?
No, not really. I mean, I don't think they ever are. I had a friend who had a brownstone. I moved in upstairs. Her and her husband lived downstairs, and I moved in upstairs. And I think that lasted for about a year or so. And I stayed in Brooklyn. I had an apartment in
like
Brooklyn.
Like everybody else.
Yeah. And then 4 years ago, I moved to New Jersey. So
got all your shots, and you were able to cross the Hudson.
Yeah, and my space, and, you know.
Let's move to art. You are a painter and apparently self-taught there as well.
Yes.
You have to have all these outlets for your creativity, I see.
I think that's what it is. I just constantly need to be creative. I used to sketch as a kid. I never thought I could paint. It didn't even enter my mind. But I would say in 2010, I started dabbling just, you know, an outlet, a hobby.
Did it for you?
I did it for me. It was just something I thought, oh, let me try.
Mm-hmm.
And I painted something pretty good.
And I thought, you must say so yourself.
I was like, oh, no, I did not do this. So, of course, I knew I needed to perfect. And I would be on YouTube a lot learning techniques and just buying acrylic, buying oil, figuring out what I liked, what my style was. And I actually started selling about a year ago. I had some success about a year ago.
Selling your paintings
selling
online?
Selling my paintings online. So I have a website.
And that is?
Explore My Art.
Uh-huh.
And, it's mainly abstract, figurative. I have a lot of music-inspired pieces.
Now, forgive me for saying this, but do you not find that odd that people don't know who you are and they're buying your art? Well, maybe that's not fair.
I know what you mean.
Oh, good. Because I feel like I'm digging myself a hole here. So why don't you answer the question?
I'm not well-established
artist. Or you don't necessarily have the credentials. You didn't go to this, you know, to an art school, whatever. I understand that this is what you feel inside of you and you can translate that onto canvas. But is that unusual? And that your paintings are not $1.380 either.
Yeah. I'm sure if I went to art school and I had all these credentials, I'm sure I would be in galleries. And, you know, I don't believe you need a degree in something to succeed. That's just always been my thing.
Training, experience,
and the result itself speaks for itself, I think, you know. But no, I've never felt odd about it. I think the people who buy my paintings, they get to know me through my fan page, and they don't just buy because they like. And I think that's always the case with art anyway. I mean, of course, you love a piece, but...
Well, if something speaks to you.
Something speaks to you, it does speak to you, but a lot of people go to the gallery and just stare. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily buy, and they'll go back and look at it again. But if you want a piece, you definitely want to know a little bit about the artist. And I find that. Or in my experience, anyway.
In 2010, you said you started to pick up a paintbrush?
Yes.
And that's 3 years later. And mm-hmm. Have you sort of made a living selling your paintings?
Well, not as much as I'd like to.
Well, God knows you don't have the time.
I can't put 100% into it. And I didn't focus. I haven't been focusing all my energy in my art because I have
another business,
GML, to run. Yeah, so it's definitely a great thing that I'm doing on the side. And once I don't know when things will calm down. I don't think they will. I'll keep doing it the way I'm doing it.
So you're happy with the way things are divided now?
Absolutely.
In terms of this business and your art. And for all intents and purposes, have you sort of closed the door on music?
No, I still write music. When I feel like it, I write a song. But I believe everything happens at the right time. So I don't rush it, and I'm not trying to get a song placed. I don't have to do that because I have something that's occupying me right now that I'm passionate about.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
And if, you know, the way I write and composing melody is not going to stop, and I can do that in 20 years' time, you know.
Do you play an instrument?
No, I don't, actually. I don't play any instruments. I think what people really need to understand is it's okay to do multiple things. Of course, you're a lawyer and you want to be, you know, you want to practice law and you're passionate about that. But if you like to write on the side, there's no reason why you shouldn't pursue something that you're very passionate about. I think it's a part of living. I think you have to pursue something that you're interested in or that's a talent or it's a gift. So,
and do you think that you are gifted and talented?
Absolutely. And I'm very lucky that I'm also business-minded on top of that because that's a whole different thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being creative isn't just enough. You have to be able to learn the business and you have to understand how things work, and you have to adapt and
but
change.
But you were self-taught in all those areas.
I read a lot. Mm-hmm. I love YouTube. I love inspirational messages, and I love inspirational books, business books. Self-help section is my favorite section at the bookstore. It's all about growing for me. You know, it's not all business. And that's why I was saying earlier that even though I work 24/7 on my business, I will work out. I will meditate. I will do all these other things.
So you think there's a really nice balance going on in your life that you're able to, in a sense, compartmentalize that.
Absolutely.
And you don't feel cheated in one area as opposed to another area.
In fact, if I'm not being creative, I feel sad. If I'm working on business too much, like on the admin side or working on the finance end, and it's been a week and I haven't painted or I haven't written.
You feel deprived.
I feel like something is missing. All I have to do is pick up a paintbrush and it could be 20 minutes and I'm good, you know. So I think it's just about feeding my calling.
You know? And or understanding and listening to it.
Yeah, I'm very in tune with myself.
And if you didn't sell your art, you'd be okay with that?
I would be 100% fine. I'd just keep collecting my own art.
You'd run out of walls, but that's all
really
right.
I really am. You should see one of the rooms.
That's great. Well, Mona, it sounds like you've got a great future ahead of you,
Thank you.
And that we'll be hearing a lot more from you.
Thank you
I
so
just
much.
Wonder... You know, I feel not exhausted necessarily listening to all this, but you leave a lot of people in the dust.
And, you know, I don't think a lot of people know this about me, even my closest friends. I don't self-promote so much. I don't speak too much of all the different things I'm doing. It's there to see if you happen
well,
to be in
my life. Well, make sure they listen to this, and so they'll know more about you. And, I mean, well, there are other reasons, too, obviously. But it was a real pleasure to meet you.
Thank you so much.
I wish you a lot of luck.
Thank you so much.
I have a feeling we'll be hearing a lot of Mona Sala.
Thank you
say
so
something,
much.
Say goodbye to us in Tigrinya.
Tigrinya. Oh, actually, it's ciao.
We were kidding. Okay.
We were colonized by Italy, so ciao, bello, all of that stuff.
Isn't that funny? All right, well, ciao to you too.
Okay, ma'asalama.
Join us for another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.
Thanks for listening to the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. For show comments and suggestions, please follow us on Twitter at Sandy Klein Show. You can also find us on Facebook at The 51%. The show is produced and recorded by Chad Dugatz at the Hangar Studios in New York City. Sandy Klein is our executive producer.